I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live podcast. This is a segment from last week's live video show. You can find either one of the live video shows on either Thursday at 7 p.m. or Sundays at 12:05. And now, on with the show.
I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live. Please pay attention to our warning graphic. It states that the Retro Rogues Live show is intended for an adult audience and not intended for children under the age of 13. Parental discretion is advised. Again, I want to welcome you to the show. My name is Dave Bate. I'm one of your hosts. On tonight's show, this is going to be episode 141 of the Retro Rogues Live. This is a Collector's Corner episode. We're going to be talking about the Heroes for Hire. PSI has bought WADA, District 10, Loki, and more. All that, and maybe even some surprises on tonight's episode of the Retro Rogues Live. Again, my name is Dave Bate. I'm one of your hosts. For nearly the last 30 years, I've been a professional illustrator and graphic designer, worked on a lot of fun things that some people have heard of, such as Batman Incorporated, Justice League of America, and even Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes. But enough about that. I want to welcome back my co-host. This is the great Eric Alexander. Eric, please tell the folks, hopefully watching or listening at home, some of the fun things you have worked on as a creative professional.
Yes, hello. I'm Eric Alexander, also known as Base God 14. That's Base God 14, not Bass God. That's Base God, like, you know, a bass guitar. And I am the chief financial officer of Bad Bob Productions, which is a small film production company located in Arizona. Currently, I am the executive producer on a film called Staycation, which has been filming in California and currently is doing a lot of stuff on Zoom lately.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. So we're going to start off the episode this evening. I am going to share something. I'm going to do like we did last week, where we actually start off with a actual pop culture news story. So this will be my pop culture contribution for tonight. This is kind of an older story, but I thought it would be worth talking about. So this actually comes from the hashtag show. This originally came out, this story originally ran on July 7th. I've heard some different people kind of talking about this, and I'd heard about these rumors before, but I didn't know the actual source. And so I said, well, let me go to the hashtag show website and figure out where this is actually coming from. So this was posted by Nick Santos, and this is rumor. This is all rumor, everyone. But in this news story, they talk about that they had reported on the return of some Marvel Netflix actors and characters, but not among them for the new productions was either Mike Coulter's Luke Cage or Finn Jones' Iron Fist. And he says, after that post, everyone asked one universal question, what is Marvel planning to do with these characters? All right, so if you want to read this article, I'm going to encourage you to go over and check this out over in the hashtag show. Read it for yourself. Again, it's rumor. But I thought it would be worth talking about for this evening. I am a big Iron Fist fan. I've talked about that before on a previous episode. I showed one of my graded Iron Fist comics I actually have in my collection. I'm also a fan of the Heroes for Hire. And I'd had many, many conversations with people outside of the show, with my brother, for example, off and on for years and years and years, saying that, you know, a really great show for Marvel to do would actually be to just straight up do a Heroes for Hire show. Just do a Heroes for Hire show. You know, it could have that great sort of like 80s, late 70s, early 80s kind of a formula. You know, Eric, those kind of great shows like, you know, Simon and Simon or whatever, where they're investigating with a little bit of A-team action thrown in there. You know, and the budget could be kept relatively low because it's all special effects we've seen before. Bullets bouncing off of Power Man, some martial arts choreography, some superhuman strength stuff. It just seemed like such a no-brainer to me. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, it does. You know, definitely feel that A-team vibe.
Yeah, I think it'd be really great. And I was really kind of surprised that with the Netflix shows that they took both of these characters in the directions they went. You know, Luke Cage, I enjoyed that series on Netflix. I enjoyed Iron Fist on Netflix, and a lot of people didn't like Iron Fist. Iron Fist had a lot of problems. I still personally enjoyed the show, even though it had some issues. And one of my favorite episodes of both episodes was the one that actually teamed Power Man with Iron Fist. And I just absolutely loved that episode. That episode was so much fun, and those guys had such great, like, buddy cop kind of chemistry between the two of them. They played off of each other really well. And I kept thinking, God, this is a show you guys should be doing. Why aren't you doing this? You know, after you do season one of Power Man, you do season one of Iron Fist. And for season three, you put those guys together and you let them have some adventures. To me, that seemed like a no-brainer. Now, the persistent rumor is that Marvel is going to possibly be recasting both of these characters. And I'd heard this before, and that maybe there is a Heroes for Hire show coming to Disney Plus. Had you by any chance heard that rumor, Eric?
No, not at all. That's not something that's been on my radar. I had not heard that at all.
Well, it's something I've heard kind of off and on for a while. And I thought, you know what? I think there's something here, and I think it's worth bringing it up on the show and making a focus of our Collector's Corner. So without further ado, let's get into the picks for this evening. Now, I do have, you can't see because I have my camera turned off tonight, but I do have here on my ink-stained fingers, I've got some notes here for tonight's picks. It is all going to be Heroes for Hire, everybody. So we're going to start right here with a new card I'm going to talk about. So this is from 1975. This is a top sticker. Again, the top stickers don't seem to have any numbering. This is Power Man. This is Luke Cage. And as far as I could tell, this is his first appearance. A pretty interesting sticker here. And I've got some really interesting information about potentially what the value of this thing is, which is insane to me. But what do you think about this choice, Eric?
I like it. I've enjoyed a lot of these sticker cards. I think they are on the side of a little bit goofy. I've said it before. They almost remind me of my Garbage Pail Kid cards. I like the little quotes they have. You know, I was a 98-pound weakling, you know. They seem like fun cards, and you know, the images, you know, they seem to be taken straight out of the comic books, and so I like them. I dig them.
I do too. I think they're really cool. And as I said, I've been kind of slowly adding some of these to my collection. I don't actually have an example of this particular card. This is the only card actually from tonight's show that we're showing that didn't actually come from my personal collection. Everything else you're going to see tonight is a scan of one of my cards in my extra collection, but I don't have this particular one. So I did some research on this. We like to talk about it. Again, we make recommendation. I focus on the raw cards, so the graded cards. And my usual benchmark is $20 or less for a card. That's what I like. $20 or less, even for a comic, $20 or less. You know, kind of low barrier of entry if you want to pick one up to try and get it graded and get into the speculation game. That's kind of how we look at things here, on at least in the first segment. Now, this one's interesting, Eric. what do you think this one goes for raw, not graded?
Oh, it's always so hard on these cards. I personally don't collect them, so I don't come across these kinds of things in the wild or anything like that. So I have no basis of reference, you know. You would think, right, because it's an older card, that it should have, you know, a greater value, but it's not always the case. But David Motz is in the house, and he has a guess.
All right, here we go.
$5. So I'm gonna back up David Motz and say $5.
All right. Well, I'm gonna say that's not a bad guess, and I'm glad that David Motz is here. I want to encourage everyone, please, if you're watching the show, please comment from wherever you are. It doesn't matter if it's Facebook, Twitch, Twitter. It doesn't matter. Just comment from wherever you are. We'll be happy to put your comments up on the show as long as they're relevant to what we're talking about. We're not going to put up your spammy comments. But if you want to actually participate in the show and join in the fun, as David Motz just did with his suggestion of $5, well, there you go. All right. So I feel like David Motz is in the right ballpark. It seems to me, based on what I saw on primarily eBay, for what looks like, judging by the images, a decent quality version of this card raw, you're probably looking at about $10. There are examples that go as low as $2, but when you look at the pictures, they're looking pretty rough. I wouldn't buy those. So I'm going to say probably about $10. There were some actual auctions too, where, and some listings where there was Luke Cage thrown in with some other cards, and you could get it for, again, I get about $2 a card or less. But it looked like, in all honesty, the decent pictures of the cards, they looked like they were going for about $10. And then here's the shocking part. I went on to PSA, looked to see if there were graded examples, because again, this is a new card for the show, so that's what I like to do. I like to try and get really into the research. I went to PSA. There are some Gem Mint 10 versions of this top sticker. Here's the shocking thing. Everybody, take a guess. Take a guess. What do you think a PSA 10 graded version of this card might go for?
A PSA graded version of this card.
PSA graded.
It's interesting because I haven't heard a ton of buzz about the 1975 Topps sticker cards for Marvel. I really haven't. I haven't heard a lot about them. So I'm going to go back up Dave Motz again because he came up with a guess and he's saying $50. So I'll back 50. Up David Motz and say $50.
It was an auction to complete on eBay February 24th of this year. $225.
Wow. Wow. $225.
$225. It does have a relatively low population count for high grades. Nine's about $75. So yeah, I was kind of shocked to see that. Actually, PSA says this one graded at a high grade is actually worth $337. But again, the last completed auction I could find on the internet was a PSA 10. Again, that is Gem Mint. I mean, that is your best of the best right there from PSA. And it that auction ended at $225.
David Mott says, I was close. Not.
Yeah. But this is an interesting one. If you can find a decent copy of this one that you think that you... and you can get it for relatively low entry point, might be worth taking a stab at getting this particular card graded, this actual sticker. And if Power Man ends up coming to the MCU, there you're on the MCU train. So there you go. That again, condition on this one's going to be important, everybody. Condition is going to be important. All right, so let's go ahead and go to our next card. I do have quite a few to do tonight. All right, so this, again, like I've been saying before, this is our key appearance card, everybody. This is key appearance. I'm using that nomenclature that they use for comics. This is the 1990 Impel Marvel Universe. This is card number 12, and this is a scan of my card, everybody. This was an interesting one, too. I was a little surprised at this one as well. There are other Power Man, Luke Cage cards. I like this one because, again, the 1990 Marvel Impel Universe line, I think this one's going to go down as a classic. It's highly desirable. People are collecting these. People love these. What do you think, Eric? What do you think this one goes for raw?
Well, you mentioned you were surprised, so I'm thinking that it has to be a higher value than what normally we hear. Now, there is a lot of buzz on the Marvel Impel cards. So, you know... we're talking about ungraded at this point, right?
Right, ungraded. Raw card.
So I'm gonna go for that, like I'm gonna go for $40. $40. David Mott says it's my turn, so I'm gonna say $40.
All right, well there you go. Based on what I could see, again, primarily looking at eBay, a decent version of this card.
Oh, David Mott's had a guess.
Oh,
David
okay.
Mott says $2.
$2, all right. Well, that's an interesting guess. However, the pictures, again, I looked at that were decent quality. You're ranging somewhere between $5 to $10.
Five to ten.
Again, if you get it in a run of other cards, you could probably get it less per card, but that's based on what I was seeing. There were some, again, some really nice quality scans of some cards that did look to be in really, really good shape. But I thought those auctions were a little high because that was at our $20 mark. And I thought, I don't know. But there were some really decent ones I saw. Again, good quality scans, raw cards, $5 to $10 for this one. Here's the kicker, though. What do we think a PSA graded card of this one would go for? Let's say a 10.
Well, David Watts is in the same boat as me. He says he's guessing his game is off tonight. I think mine is as well. I'm going to stick with $40.
$40.
I'm just going to stick with $40.
All right. If anybody else wants to venture a guess, throw it into the chat. We're trying to guess what a PSA graded card like this would go for. There is an example on eBay right now, but don't go to eBay. Going to eBay right now is cheating. But I guess you could cheat and we wouldn't know.
David Motz is going with $50.
$50. All right. I saw a PSA graded card. I forgot to write down the grade actually here on my notes. I think it was a 9 on eBay right now. Buy it now. $85.
$85.
There was kind of prices all over the place. Like one person even said PSA 10, but it wasn't actually graded for $150. That's just ridiculous. But the one I saw that looked legit, that was actually graded, you know, it was encapsulated, all that kind of stuff, was going for $85. I was kind of surprised that this one was going for that. Yeah, I was surprised these Power Man cards are as high as they are. Aren't you too, Eric, or is that just me?
No, I'm not. Not with Marvel Impel line. They're all over the place. So there's a lot of buzz on this particular. No, I don't think there's any rhyme or reason to what the value is for Marvel Impel cards from this era. It's just there's it's so speculative when it comes to these cards. I think even this is a good example. It still hasn't settled down to really give you a good sense of what these cards are going to be in the future. I think when it comes to this line, this is a purely speculative line right now. It's very hot. It's very speculative. I don't think it makes any sense. That's just me. Well,
there you go. And so when we're talking about Heroes for Hire, the diehard comic fans know that there's a duo, a dynamic duo, if you will, if you came into the show late. So we're going to talk about Luke Cage's partner in crime, or I guess crime-fighting partner, as it were, Iron Fist. Now, this is card's second appearance on the show. I'm a big Iron Fist fan. We had a lot of fun with his Kung Fu slippers there last time.
Slippers.
Yeah, ballet slippers. I'm going to recommend this one again because this is a first appearance for Iron Fist. I'm going to just go ahead and throw the amount out there because we've talked about this card before. $10 and up for this one, ungraded. $10 and up. So we're going to go ahead and go to the next one. This is the new Iron Fist card that I'm bringing up for tonight. This is going to be our key.
On the previous card, had you seen any graded examples?
I haven't. I actually looked. I couldn't find any graded examples. I was on the PSA site trying to see if I could find one, and I couldn't actually find a graded example for this one. Some really nice graded collections, actually, of these Topps stickers, actually, on PSA, if you want to go to PSA's website and check them out. But I didn't find a graded example for Iron Fist. Now, my research was pretty hasty on this one, and I was trying to double-check for tonight's show. But based on what I'm seeing, you're looking at $10 and up for a decent version of this Iron Fist sticker. Again, this is his first appearance, everybody. First appearance on a card, sticker, whatever. This is the first appearance for Iron Fist. And then again, our new card for tonight. And again, $10 and up, $10 and up. I got mine in an auction a little while ago, actually with another card, which I've showed. I got Iron Fist and Submariner in the same buy it now for about $20. And that included actually my shipping, by the way.
Cool.
But this is our new card for tonight. This is our key appearance, everybody. We're going to use this one as our key appearance because my pick is going to be something specifically Heroes for Hire related. So this is from 1991. Again, this is the Impel Marvel Universe. This is Series 2. I didn't put that in there, but this is Series 2. This is card number 28. This is Iron Fist. And I've always really liked this card. It's very dynamic. Mark Bagley art here looks really cool, I think. A brand new card actually here for the show to talk about. What do we think about this one, everybody? What do you think, Eric? What do we think the raw going rate for this card is?
Let's see. I'm going to go, raw ungraded. I'm going to go with, based on what we've seen with some of the other picks tonight, I'm going to go with $10.
$10. Well, there you go.
David Motz apparently is a Bagley fan. So.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I like Bagley too. All right. So this one we're looking at a range $2 to $5 raw.
Two to five.
And I couldn't find any PSA graded examples. There might be some out there in the wild in someone's collection, as with all of these cards, you know, that we don't know about. But I couldn't find any examples that were easily accessible. But yeah, $2 to $5 for this one raw. And now
it is funny the level of buzz there is for Series One versus some of the lack of buzz for Series Two. What a difference a year makes, you know?
That's true. And
what a difference a year makes for speculators, apparently. So.
And I think this will be the second Marvel Universe Series 3 card that we've ever talked about here on the show. This is going to be the second one. And it's interesting because our last one was a very important card, a first appearance card too, and it was actually a group or a team-up card like this one. All right, so this is going to be my pick for tonight. I do believe this might be the first appearance of the Heroes for Hire actually together on a card. That's why I have first appearance with a question mark. This is not a first appearance for Power Man, not a first appearance for Iron Fist, but I do believe this might be the first appearance for the two of them together as a team on the card, directly relating back to, again, Heroes for Hire. All right, so again, this is from 1992 Marvel. This is the Impel Marvel Universe. This is Series 3. It's going to be Series 3, everybody. The last Series 3 card we talked about was actually potentially a first appearance, I think, actually for Blade with the Midnight Suns. So here we go. This is their first appearance together. It's card number 96. Again, Power Man and Iron Fist. I think this is a pretty neat card, and I'm surprised at how significant some of these cards are, because you wouldn't think – I just would have thought there had been a Heroes for Hire card way before this one. But as far as I could tell, based on my research, this as far as I could tell, is their first appearance together as Heroes for Hire anyway. So what do we think about this one raw? What do we think the raw value going rate for this card is? Primarily, I've been looking at eBay for this one.
I'm going to go with five.
$5.
I do like the card, by the way. I really do think it's a nice card. I like the background. I just like the overall presentation of them sort of ripping through the background. I think that's kind of neat. I've always kind of liked that stuff. And David Motz is going with $1.
$1.
The price is right. $1.
$1.
Well, that's so funny. Before you said that, that's what I was saying, David, was the price is right. He says, my price is right guess. I love it, David Motz. So.
Well, David Motz, come on down. You're the next contestant on The Price is Right. It's actually $2. The decent-looking versions I found on eBay were basically $2 and up. And there was quite a few of them actually for $2. So, but here's the shocking thing. I did find a PSA graded 9. Basically a 9 actually on eBay for sale. This card does have a very, very low population count because no one is getting Marvel Series 3 cards graded as far as I could tell. So this is a very, very low population count. Does not immediately equal out into value, though, everybody. Keep that in mind. But PSA 9 on eBay. You could buy it tonight if you really wanted. What do we think what the person is asking for this card on eBay right now? PSA 9 graded. What do you think, Eric?
Well, this is what they're asking for. This isn't what it's sold for, right?
Yes, so that's
You can ask anything.
Asking.
So I'm going to say $50 at least as far as what they're asking. So that would be my guess.
$50. $50. Anybody else out now on the Rogues Gallery? Comment from wherever you are. You
well,
want to
well,
play
David Motz is waiting for his car since he won the last round. So I think until he gets his car, he's not going to guess anymore.
No, that's not how it works, David Motz. You won the first item up for auction. You did not win the car. Now you get to play the car. That's how it works on the Price is Right.
He says $40.
$40. The person on eBay is asking $78. That was such a specific amount. I don't know how they arrived at 78, but they were asking for 78.
I'd be curious what it's actually selling for, you know, because that is an important point to make, is that, you know, you can ask whatever price you want. You know, you can go all the way back to, like, if anybody's a fan of Pawn Stars, they talk about this all the time, right? People will post ridiculous amounts when it comes to these auctions, you know, and think, you know, these auction sites, and that doesn't mean that the item actually sells for that. And they make that point all the time on Pawn Stars. Like, just because somebody is asking that amount doesn't mean they actually got it. That's always important to point out.
That's true. That's very true. But I just thought it was interesting that there was actually a graded example of this one on eBay if you wanted to go buy it. I just thought that was really interesting that someone thought enough that they went, well, this is probably the first Heroes for Hire card, so let me go ahead and get this one graded. It seems like they were thinking just like I was thinking if they were doing the research, and I came across that potentially that Midnight Suns card is probably the first appearance for Blade actually on a trading card. It actually predates that Masterpiece card that a lot of people consider to be his rookie card. So I thought it was just interesting to call it out. I thought, well, that's interesting. Someone thought enough that went ahead and got it graded. Obviously, depending upon which grading service you're going to use, if you can get a card graded, if you can get it graded for a decent value, it makes more sense to go out and pick up three or four of them for $2, you know, find the one in the best condition, you know, best centering, you know, sharp, crisp corners, you know, nice, clean color, you know, really bright, vibrant, you know, send it into PSA. And you know, again, there's not a high population count for this one. This would not be one that'd be tough to compete with if a Heroes for Hire thing happens, and if this card actually manages to catch some excitement from the fans.
Yeah, it's a neat card. I have to say that. I do like the background, and I like the fact that they're breaking out of it. Again, I've always just liked that stuff. It's very Kool-Aid Man.
Very true, very true. Although, based on dollar amount, you know, and based on what I would recommend, I definitely think it's worth, you know, trying to find a decent version of the Luke Cage Power Man first appearance. And again, also based on dollar amount and excitement, I think this is definitely your other one to look for, the 1990 Impel Marvel Universe Power Man. So these two, as far as the dollar amounts go, these seem to be the ones you definitely need to be looking for. But my pick for this evening is going to be this one. All right, yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah, I definitely enjoy the artwork on that one. The other two, if you got them hanging around or if you can get them cheap in good condition, definitely might be worth sending into grade.
There you go. All right. What do you have up for the Collector's Corner for tonight, Eric?
So I do have a little bit of, like, almost like kind of breaking news stuff of just different things that I've come across on the internet recently. I'm going to start out by mentioning for folks that aren't aware that it slipped their mind, because Dave and I were just talking about the fact that it's pretty much slipped our mind. But, you know, San Diego Comic-Con is doing their virtual thing right now. I don't know if people knew that. I don't think the buzz is quite there that it is with the live event. But I referred to Praeternia before, and Praeternia, they primarily do stuff on Twitter, and I follow their Twitter account, but they also have their own actual website, you know, Praeternia.com. And he's really good at getting a lot of this sort of breaking news when new toys are coming out. So if you're interested in new toys, this is definitely a good resource for that. And he put together the San Diego Comic-Con action figure related panels. So basically, he put them all together. And I didn't realize, Dave, we were talking about this. Did you realize they were already announcing stuff on the 16th for this event? Like, there was already stuff going on last week for this?
No, I remembered. I thought I'd heard something about it, but it totally had been so far under my radar. I had no idea. I didn't realize this was even going on until you reminded me about it.
Yeah, so like here you can see Target has this summer geek out event, okay, that they've been doing where they've actually brought back a few of their exclusives because, of course, we live in the era where retailers do exclusives. There are the Target exclusives, the Walmart exclusives. There are now like internet exclusives. Well, case in point, Hasbro Marvel Legends did their Fan First Friday, so they had their Hasbro Pulse exclusives, right? They actually did the Marvel Legends Galactus, which is going for $400. Had you heard about that?
Well, I was kind of aware of this, but I was confused by it because I was actually trying to, because I saw someone post a Blade Funko, like a limited edition Blade Funko that looked like the Wesley Snipes version. And I really wanted to try and get that one. I think that's how I heard about some of this. And then I totally forgot about it because it's the Funko information I got directly from Funko said it was somehow a Target exclusive. And or was Target or Walgreens? I think it was Target. And so I was like all over the website trying to figure out how in the hell do I get this? Maybe it was Walgreens. It was one of the two. It was really weird who had it. And then I went to the website and I was trying to figure out how in the hell do you get it? I just found out about it. How do you, and I couldn't figure it out. And I was just like, forget all this crap. And I closed it and got on with my life because I couldn't figure out how to buy it. I wanted to buy it and I couldn't figure it out. And I got frustrated and I was like, screw this. I got stuff to do.
Well, the HasLab Galactus thing is crazy. I think it's absolutely insane. So you can check that out. That's over at HasLab. But they were starting these announcements all the way last week, and they were supposed to be affiliated with the San Diego Comic-Con at home. And they had the NECA panel on Monday, which I did hear about that. I did see a little bit from the NECA panel. They did have quite a few different, prototypes and things like that that they were showing. So if you're interested in the NECA line of any of their stuff, they did do a pretty comprehensive teaser on YouTube on Monday. That was on the 19th. But as you can see, Bandai apparently was doing some pre-orders for some Dragon Ball Z figures, the Super Androids. So there's a lot of stuff that's been going on. And again, I haven't been keeping up with it. Walmart started doing their thing, I guess, today. So, of course, again, we're in the age of retail exclusives. So, of course, I'm sure Walmart's going to be focusing on either, the exclusives that they're bringing up, or, they're going to be talking about maybe stuff that they're bringing back, stuff like that. You can actually see a lot of the stuff is listed here. And I'm going to get into the Star Wars line specifically in a second, by the way, because I think this is pretty interesting. They did some Clone Wars stuff that is relevant to the stuff that we've been talking about on our show. So I'm going to bring that up in a second. That's part of Walmart. And that actually came out today. So that's basically breaking news. But you have stuff like Golden Axe. That's from Storm Collectibles. Mezcon is doing stuff like their Living Dead dolls. It says Halloween 3, Season of the Witch box set. Mattel's got some exclusives that they're doing. So I guess you can go to Mattel Creations. You get things like a WWE Ultimate Edition Sergeant Slaughter, Jurassic World 3 and 3/4 Final Scene, Ray Arnold, Pixar Spotless Series, Kevin, bunch of Hot Wheels stuff. They've got some Masters of the Universe stuff. There's just all sorts of stuff going on. Super 7's doing some stuff. It looks like they've got some stuff going up. They've got a reaction Shogun Godzilla. Interesting. I am familiar with the reaction line, so I'd be interested to actually check that out. But they've got all sorts of stuff that's going on during the event. So check out Praternia's site if you're interested in this. There are a lot of different exclusives that are going up for the San Diego Comic-Con at home event. So even though they're not doing the physical event, they may be doing one in November. We're still going to keep our eye out on whether that's going to happen or not. But they have been doing this virtual event. And so in regards to the Star Wars line that I was sort of teasing, let me go ahead and get that link. So this is apparently a Walmart exclusive, and I got these images from that junk man from his Twitter. And I thought this was really interesting. This is actually relevant for the show because Dave and I recently did a review of the 2D Star Wars Clone Wars show, also known as the Star Wars Clone Wars Micro Series. So this is the 2D Star Wars. So Walmart, for the 50th anniversary of Lucasfilm, is coming out. Wait a second. Is that right? Does that sound right? That's not right. It says 50 Lucasfilm. So, well, is it 50? Is it 50 years of Lucasfilm if you go all the way back to like American Graffiti and THX or whatever? No, that's not right.
I guess it could be. I don't know. I don't know what the hell that is.
Okay, so it does say 50th on it. It does say 50th. So I'm guessing that we're maybe talking all the way back to like THX. That's my guess. You know what I mean? But that would be just my guess. I don't know if that's true or not. So it does say 50th Lucasfilm. You can see it right there on the card. But as part of this sort of celebration, they're doing these Walmart exclusive Clone Wars 2D action figures. Now, one thing that you can see here is they have the Battle Droid, which I don't think they actually came out with in the original 2D line. I'm not that familiar with that line. I think somewhere I might have a couple of those figures in a box, but those are actually getting harder to find, the actual original 2D action figures. And what was really neat about them was they truly looked like they were straight out of the cartoon. That's one problem with this line. So you'll see it right away. So with the ARC Troopers, they still look pretty good, and they still look a lot like the cartoon. So that's nice. You can see that the card back obviously has the 2D image. And the figures, you know, they do have a pretty good resemblance. You know, here's the ARC Trooper. You know, he does have a pretty good resemblance to the cartoon. But they're not cartoony. If anybody's familiar with the you know, the original line of these figures that came out when the show was out, they were very unique. They looked very cartoony. And you can really see the difference here. All right. So I can't even pronounce her name. Dave, can you pronounce, do you know her? Can you pronounce her name?
I can't read it from back here.
So this character, I'm familiar with her look and everything like that. And you can see the cartoon image, and then you can see what the figure looks like. And the figure looks like she's straight out of the movie. I mean, she looks like she's straight out of like the live action movie. She doesn't have that cartoony look that the other one did. But the card back, of course, has the cartoon. And of course, you've got the Clone Wars sort of logo there on the top. So in a lot of ways, these are like an homage. You can see that with this figure as well. You know, they look very much like more like the style of the live action. The figure itself looks much more in the style of live action, but they do have the card back that has the 2D Clone Wars, you know, image on it, and they do have the logo. And then we think we got one more, which is Aya Sakura. That's one that I do know. And you can see very much the figure itself looks like she's straight out of the live action film. And you can see, because you got the comparison right next to, as opposed to what the 2D cartoon version looked like. So I don't know what do you think about that, Dave? That's one thing that I noticed with this line is the figures, they don't really have the cartoon look.
Well, keeping in line with our game show theme so far, we were just doing bum bum ba bum. That's what I think. Because here's the deal. If you're gonna tell me that they're Clone Wars, they need to look like the Clone Wars characters. I mean, I mean I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm being overly harsh. My apologies if anyone feels that way. But I just feel like that if you're gonna do a 2D, you know, Clone Wars, you know, like from the Gendy Turkowski version, the figures should be in the Gendy Turkowski style. Like I saw something about this actually too earlier today. And I was like, oh, that sounds really cool. And I hadn't had a chance to actually, you know, search them out to see what they actually look like. And, you know, just repurpose movie figures on card backs with images from the 2D Clone Wars, that doesn't interest me. I mean, just kind of at all. I mean, if it was in the Genndy Tartakovsky style, like if it actually looked like the actual 2D Clone Wars stuff, that would be a lot cooler. But, you know, this is the complete opposite of that stuff that we were looking at with the Super 7. Like, you know, the Super 7 G.I. Joe figures, man, they look like they walked right out of the cartoon. You know, they look amazing. You know, these, they don't, I don't feel like these represent the 2D Clone Wars show very well at all.
Yeah, and I actually was commenting on this thread with Junkman, and he basically agrees. He actually recently did a video on the original Star Wars clone, you know, the 2D Clone Wars figures. And so I do recommend that if for those of you that might be familiar with that, or maybe you're not, like maybe you that completely passed you by and you never even realized they had Clone Wars figures for the 2D cartoon. Junkman did a pretty good video where he shows the entire line, and you can really see the attention to detail they did in that line as opposed to what they're doing now, which I think is more of a gimmick. You know, that's the bottom line. It's more of a gimmick. At best, it's like an homage, right? It's an homage to the 2D Clone Wars. They're not truly 2D Clone Wars figures in my mind, you know?
No, I totally agree with that because it, again, it doesn't look like 2D Clone Wars at all to me. I can tell it's the character, but it just doesn't look like the 2D Clone Wars at all.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely hear that. And then I did want to just kind of briefly, David Motz had a question regarding San Diego Comic-Con at home, and he said, are there any comic book exclusives that you know about? The only one I know about is IDW has a release tomorrow. And David Motz, I think I'm speaking for David too. We don't. We haven't been following San Diego Comic-Con all that much. In fact, I didn't realize again that stuff was happening last week. The NECA news, like their panel just randomly came up because I happened to be looking at some stuff on Twitter at that time. And I follow a lot of, you know, people like, you know, Paternia and that junk band Retro Blasting. I follow a lot of people that are into that stuff. So that's why I even heard about that. So Dave, you mentioned to me off the air that you haven't been really following San Diego Comic-Con. Are you aware of any comic book exclusives from San Diego Comic-Con?
No, I, like I said, I honestly had forgotten this event was was even happening, like at all. Yeah, totally. I totally didn't. I didn't even realize it was happening at all.
But again, there are a lot of toy exclusives that are happening. And again, I do recommend because Paternia put that all together. So if you are interested in checking out, you know, what the exclusive toys are, he did a good job putting that all together in a very easy, digestible format. So I do recommend that. Now I have one other sort of breaking toy news thing. I do like to focus on toys when it comes to Collector's Corner because that's sort of more my thing. And so this is from the Mego Museum, okay? This is straight from their themegomuseum.com. It says Mego, right? Jeez, my goodness. Mego and
Mego.
Hasbro
Mego.
For exclusive G.I. Joe product line. Mego Corporation and Hasbro have announced today, so this is breaking news, that they are working together on a series of eight inch action figures based on G.I. Joe, a real American hero. So this announcement came in a special live stream event in the Mego Ambassadors Facebook group. And they do have a link that you can go to check out that. So launching today at Hasbro Pulse, so this is another Hasbro Pulse deal, fans can pre-order the first exclusive 8-inch G.I. Joe figures in the form of the Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow 2-pack. Click here to order. The figures will be the first to have it's the MA24 bandless body concept that Mego developed, and they've also come up with a variety of weapons and accessories. So you can go over to Hasbro Pulse and check this out. It's a two pack for $60. So you get both figures. Here's Storm Shadow. Can you see him?
Yeah, he looks pretty cool. Yeah, I like that.
So this is for those of you that have ever wondered, you know, what a G.I. Joe, you know, Mego action figure would look like. This is their interpretation of Storm Shadow. And then here's Snake Eyes. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he looks pretty cool. Well, here's the thing, Eric. When I was a kid, and I've been thinking about these toys a lot lately, because Fresh Monkey Fiction, who I don't remember if we've talked about on the show before or not, they do like Golden Age superhero toys and stuff every once in a while. Right now, they're doing in the process of doing figures for Eagle Force, I think it was called back in the day. There was these tiny little metal figurines or whatever, and they're doing them like G.I. Joe scale, and they look pretty cool, and it's kind of neat. And I've been thinking about a lot of those. And when I was a kid, back when the Ninja Craze was all the rage, at Kroger's and different places like that, you could get these really cool ninja action figures. And they were just like generic ninja action figures. That's all they were. They were primarily for sale at the grocery store. They were the Mego style figures. And they were just like generic, like a white ninja, you know, black ninja, red ninja, whatever. And I always thought they were really cool. And I kept thinking, I wish someone would do something like that. So these particularly appeal to me because it's something I've been thinking about recently.
Sorry, I had a hiccup there, so I couldn't hear you.
Oh, all I was saying is just these appeal to me because I have been thinking about those ninja action figures they used to sell at the grocery stores that were in the Mego style. So this definitely appeals to me, and the fact that it's actually, you know, Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes makes it even cooler. I'm only concerned about what the price tag is.
I like this. Well, I gave you the price tag. The image right here, I think, is really neat. I would caption this as "Don't bring nunchucks to a gunfight." It's for those of us that you may be listening to the audio version of the program. It's an image of Snake Eyes. Basically, he's behind a wall, and Storm Shadow's on the other side of the wall. And Snake Eyes has his gun out, and then Storm Shadow has a pair of nunchucks. So I like that. I would caption that as "Don't bring nunchucks to a gunfight." Cool stuff. I think these are really interesting looking figures. I've always liked the aesthetic of the Mego figures, and I don't know. I mean, I don't think that this, compared to what we were talking about last week, and the fact that I think it was one figure for $50, two figures for $60 seems a lot more reasonable to me, Dave.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I think they look pretty cool. They've got a lot of cool accessories too, so that's pretty neat. I like the fact that Storm Shadow actually comes with this full backpack, and it's just like, you know, the original, you know, action figure toy, you know, and you can put the swords and stuff in it. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's some good attention to detail right there. Yeah, that's one of those cool things that brings you back. And that this looks like my classic original, you know, Storm Shadow figure. I think they did a good job with the Snake Eyes too. You know, that now it was interesting in contrast to what we were talking about last week, you know, where the G.I. Joe figures, the G.I. Joe Ultimates line, where that was the original Snake Eyes basically from the cartoon. This is much more, I think, the Snake Eyes that people actually like the most, which is the second edition of Snake Eyes where he has the sword and the Uzi. You know, I think a lot of people have always kind of actually preferred this version of Snake Eyes, even though I really like the original. I think a lot of people, this is like their definitive Snake Eyes, you know, with the sword and the Uzi.
Yeah, I prefer the original Commando version myself too, just because that was the original version. But this is definitely kind of the classic version I think a lot of people think of too. It looks pretty cool.
It's the sword, you know, that's a big part of it too. I think a lot of people like that when Snake Eyes started to carry the sword around, you know. And interestingly enough, in the cartoon, he didn't have it in this configuration. In the cartoon, he sort of just had like a sort of over his shoulder, whereas the toy has the big backpack, you know, that the sword fits into. I always remember thinking about that as a kid, because I always liked the look better in the cartoon, where it was just, you know, the sword strap sort of He-Man style, you know. So
right.
No, but nobody's made a toy of that as far as, well, somebody probably has, you know, but I've never seen one, I guess, is what it comes down to. So So yeah, there's a lot of toy news out there, and I definitely wanted to share that with everyone so that they're aware of it. Again, aware that San Diego Comic-Con is going on, that there are exclusives going on. David Motz mentioned there are even comic book exclusives going on. At least we know of one from IDW. He says that releases tomorrow, which will be the 23rd, depending on when you see this broadcast or maybe hear it on the audio show. And then let's see. Are we all cut up here? You guys.
I was asking David Motz a question because I wanted to start getting back into doing giveaways and stuff on the show. And David's been commenting and stuff and played along with the guessing game and everything. I thought that was really cool. So I was asking him if he was more of an X-Man or a Daredevil fan. And he said he's more of a Wolverine fan.
There you go.
And so, David Motz, we're friends on Facebook, so just message me your address and I'll put these in the mail to you. These are two 1990 Marvel Impel trading cards. We're going to send you Sabretooth and Spider-Man Presents the Wolverine. Want to thank you for participating in the show, being in the chat, playing along, being a good sport. Thought that was really cool. So send me your address and I'll drop these in the mail to you. And I want to thank you for participating in the Rogues Gallery.
I love that Spider-Man card. That is so cool. Yeah. Wolverine, your real name is Logan. Is that your first name or your last name? Yep.
Yeah.
I love it. For all any of our audio listeners out there, that's the card, that one of the cards he put up. Spider-Man basically serving a drink to Wolverine. I like that. And David Motz apparently really is a super fan. He says, that's my son's name.
Well, there you go. Very cool. Very cool.
I have a daughter named Harley. So I totally get that, Dave, because I have a daughter named Harley. So, all right. What else are we actually supposed to cover today? you know what? It's still related to Collector's Corner. So let's talk about this big news. In terms of grading, let's talk about this big news, because we actually alluded a little bit to some of the stuff that's been going on a previous episode. We've been talking about the fact that maybe it would be nice to talk about video games a little bit, and particularly collecting video games, that aspect of video games and why people get them. So a lot of people might have heard about what's recently been happening with WADA in terms of some of these amazing prices they've been getting at auctions. Very controversial, actually. But this is from actionnetwork.com. I want to give a shout out to Reserved Investments, because Reserved Investments has been talking about this story quite a bit. And this is actually where I found the article. So thank you, Reserved Investments, for being on like the cutting edge of the story. So this is from actionnetwork.com. It's the headline reads, PSA grading parent buys video game grader WADA. So Collectors Universe continued its buying spree, announcing Wednesday morning, by the way, this is dated July 14th, so it is a little bit dated, that it had bought video game grader WADA Games. The acquisition comes 2 weeks after the parent company of PSA, the industry leader in grading cards and autographs, finalized a deal to bring Golden Auctions under its umbrella. Terms were not disclosed. The company will move from its Denver offices into PSA's headquarters in California, but will keep its name and branding. Pretty interesting there. The bet on WADA comes at a time when Collectors Universe is hoping to get a jump on building up its business and grading other forms of collectibles. WADA was founded in 2017 by 25-year-old Dense Khan, who started collecting old video games and noticed the need for a company to grade the cartridges, boxes, and seals in the event they were never open. In 2018, WADA was grading a handful of games. Not only does WADA bet on the nostalgia of kids who play particular Atari and Nintendo games, who are now 35 to 50, but the adoption of video game collecting as an asset class took flight thanks to its impressive thick cases that securely allow a collector to display the game standing up on a desk. Says the business has gotten more sophisticated in the fall of 2019 when Ryan Sabga, whose company Canyon Drive built the cases, signed on as a CEO. The company has never released financials nor population reports. Very important. So they have never released financials or population reports. But from eBay auctions alone, it's apparent that the company has graded thousands and thousands of games. So the big thing, of course, was in July of last year, a Super Mario Brothers game sealed and graded at a 9.4 on a 10-point scale sold at Heritage for $114,000. In April of this year, a Super Mario Brothers game sold for $660,000. And last week, a Super Mario Brothers game sold for $1.56 million. It says, as the category grew, Heritage moved video game sales from the back pages of its comic book auctions to its own separate sales. You can read the rest of the article again over on Action Network. So I'm curious, Dave, we have touched a little bit on this phenomenon of WADA games and some of these ridiculous prices they've gotten. But what do you think about the fact that PSA decided to buy them out?
Well, it makes sense. I mean, you know, PSA is obviously in the business of, you know, grading and selling. You know what I mean? So it makes sense that this is this is a market. You know, I had an interesting conversation with a coworker of mine. We were talking about video games, and he's like a big video game guy. And I was mentioning to him a documentary I saw on Amazon Prime. I didn't watch it. It was on while I was working. And on that, Grant Morrison was talking about how the video games, you know, that, you know, to an extent might be the continuation of the comic book story. Like maybe comic books become more and more niche and they're only sold by little boutique shops. And, you know, why would you read about Batman when you could be Batman, right? That kind of idea. And so it makes sense to me that PSA would want to get into this. My only slight confusion is that isn't PSA, shouldn't they get their card grading in order first?
Yeah, that's a great point. That actually is a great point. The fact that it seems like PSA is already having, you know, problems as it is, and as far as just accommodating the customer base and people that want things graded. But this has been in the works for a while. My understanding was a lot of people thought PSA was just going to start grading games, but they were just going to start doing that. They were going to start a game grading division, okay? And so some people, including Reserved Investments, were a little taken aback that they went this route and decided to purchase WADA because of the controversy that WADA doesn't provide population reports. A lot of people are very concerned about these prices that these auctions have been getting, okay? And I would say be very concerned. Be very, very concerned. If you do not want to get ripped off, be very, very concerned about what these prices are. Ronnie has a great comment, very relevant. He said, drugs are bad, okay? That's my opinion on those Mario games selling. Ronnie, you've hit the nail right on the head. I mean, it's very, very concerning in my mind about these prices. And it makes me concerned because PSA has that very, you know, that very good reputation, right? In fact, I almost feel like they have too good a reputation because there are other grading options out there and it feels like people are neglecting them because everybody wants PSA. It's got to be graded by PSA. We can't use anybody else. PSA is not even grading stuff, but we have to wait. We can't use somebody else even though they're not grading stuff right now. It's very frustrating, and I don't know. I don't know if this is really a very, very, very good move. I think it's a good move on PSA's part in terms of you know, obviously WADA has had some amazing success, but I'm not sure honestly how I feel about grading games to begin with. I really don't. I mean, it's a different animal to me than when it comes to cards and comics, you know, and some of those other things, even autographs. Grading a game that's in a hard case and then trying to determine the quality of the seal if it's never been opened, if it's never been opened, I'm kind of sitting there like, what's the point? You know, a lot of people talk about that with grading action figures too. A lot of people do not like the idea of grading action figures, and it doesn't seem like action figures have taken off the way that any of these other asset classes have, or I should say these collectibles have. I won't necessarily call them asset classes, because unless we're talking about like the first appearance of Superman or Batman or stuff like that, or Spider-Man, those might be actual asset classes at this point. I might concede that, but most of this stuff, it's just not. It's just not at that level. It's still very speculative. There's a lot of
there's a lot of shenanigans going on with this stuff. Like, I'm going to put it that way. I think there's a lot of shenanigans when it comes to this stuff. But you know, the one thing I hope is that they'll start at least putting population reports out there. That would be nice. It'd be nice if they start putting population reports out there.
And for me, I think the big difference too, like, you know, I talked on a previous episode about, you know, some of the comics I'm looking to get graded, and the ones I do have graded, I've been replacing those by buying, you know, trade paperbacks and essentials, so that I'm still able to access the story and the materials and whatever, whenever I want. And then in my mind anyway, for those that I either are that important to me personally, or I think are valuable, that I want to, you know, kind of secure their value to an extent, you know, getting a comic CGC graded is a good way to kind of, you know, guarantee a little bit better price when you go to sell it, right? At least and that's the general consensus of the theory, general belief. Yeah. In theory, there you go. That's a good way to put it. In theory. So that's how I've been looking at it. And then the thing that's nice about, you know, when you get a card, you know, graded, you can still see the front and the back of the card, you know, on the slab. So it's not like you're, you know, you can still experience the card, because you're going to look at the image and read the information on the back, right? The comic's a little bit more difficult because you can't get to it. But when you encapsulate a game, you can't play it anymore, right?
Exactly. Exactly. It's like trading cards. I think you hit the nail on the head, because you're not really losing any of the intrinsic value of what a trading card is by getting it graded if it's in a proper case that you can see both sides of the card. You're not really losing anything. Actually, what you're doing is preserving it, right? You're actually preserving the card. So I can totally understand that. When it gets into comics, you are a step removed because you can't open the book and read it. But then again, if the book is going to fall apart, right, if it's on that old newsprint paper and all that kind of stuff, and it's going to fall apart anyway, there is some sense to putting it, you know, in some sort of a grading package. You know, that's why we bag and board comic books, right? We bag and board comic books because we're afraid of them falling apart, because they're not meant to be something that you have for a long time. So you have to take actual steps to preserve them. You know, like looking at this stuff, like you're talking about a Switch game, right? Which, you know, I don't think anybody's grading Switch games yet, but it's going to happen, right? But the picture that's up is these are Switch games. Switch games come in a nice hard case, and they're small cartridges, okay? So the preservation of that game is pretty much already taken care of. They come in a good case. And, you know, the media itself is not prone. It's not like a floppy disk that you put it out in the sun 5 minutes and it melts. OK, it's a pretty solid media as it is. And you can probably enjoy it for a very, very long time, as long as you just take care of it. Right. So when you slap it into some other, you know, clear box. Right. Because I guess you just want to look at the case. And of course, you never opened it, because to get that 10 or whatever, you're going to have it sealed, factory sealed. The appeal starts to, at that point, I think you're losing it. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, where is the real joy of that? You know, it just becomes another speculative, you know, thing that people are trying to make a quick buck on, you know?
I agree. You know, but like I said, and it's interesting that you bring that up, talking about the condition. I have up on the shelf over here, I've got the second appearance of Moon Knight and Werewolf by Night. and it is graded and encapsulated. And part of the reason for that, number one, is I'm a big Moon Knight fan. I've talked about that. And then secondly, the reason for it too, in all honesty, is it came back a 3.0. You know, it's not a super high quality book, but actually having encapsulated and graded is kind of helping to protect it a little bit, because the book is in relatively poor condition. So it's not like I'm going to be cracking that open and reading it again anyway. So it is a way to kind of, you know, preserve it to an extent. And also because it's graded, it actually is going to help it basically retain more value potentially than if it was just loose. If it was just loose, you know, someone probably wouldn't give me, you know, probably more than $10 for it. But because it's great, it's the 3.0, it's a second appearance of Moon Knight. You know, if the show comes out, the Disney Plus show's good, you know, it does really well, you know, I've actually kind of protected my investment a little bit to an extent.
Yeah.
In theory, as you say, Eric, in theory.
and the preservation aspect isn't something to dismiss. I was just looking at some of my 80s G.I. Joe comics the other day, and I really literally felt like they were going to fall apart. And they've been sitting in a box in bags, not boarded, but bags for years. And I hadn't touched them for years. I mean, there was dust on the box. And literally, I was afraid like these books were going to basically disintegrate in my hand. So there is the preservation aspect of that as well. But that's not the case with a lot of these video games. It just isn't, you know. You know, a lot of the Nintendo stuff, they were in boxes. So and those boxes will deteriorate over time. That's definitely a concern. I do get that to some extent, but I don't know. It just doesn't seem like you're very much losing what a video game intrinsically is by never opening it and putting it in a plastic case. It's just kind of a weird thing. I did want to acknowledge that Mike Lombard is in the house. He said, hey, guys. So, hey, Mike, we appreciate you checking out the show. And then we had a comment from David regarding graded action figures. And he said, graded action figures is also another one you can still enjoy. And it's funny you say that, David, because there's a lot of people that would argue with you. Me personally, I generally like to keep stuff that I buy, especially now, I keep it in the package. Pretty much the stuff that I bought as an adult collector, you know, outside of my childhood, because I do have toys from my childhood that are loose. Most of my stuff I keep in the package, but I had a roommate that used to actually like basically tell me that I was committing sacrilege because I wouldn't open my toys and display them as they should be. So it's kind of funny because there are people that disagree there as well. You know, they say, hey, free the toy. You know what I mean? You don't want him to be like Stinky Pete from Toy Story, do you? You know what I mean? You've got to free him. So, but David, I totally get where you're coming from, because typically I do actually stuff I get now and stuff I've gotten as an adult, I keep it in the package. So in that case, grading them wouldn't necessarily really do anything to lose the enjoyment that I'm getting out of it, because I rarely take them out of the package anyway.
Yeah, and I was going to say, for me, I like to keep them in the packaging too, because I feel like it's part of the presentation. You know, I used to describe my action figure collection as sort of like a in my mind anyway, a derivative adjunct, if you will, to pop art. You know, it's mass produced, like what Warhol was doing with his prints to an extent. You know, you've got the cool comic image, you've got the physical representation of it in the action figure itself. And I have a few action figures I have specifically kept just because I love the presentation so much. Actually, I have the original Toy Biz first Captain America still in the packaging. That would be one I think would be kind of fun to get graded. And then the second one I have, actually, I mentioned Fresh Monkey Fiction earlier. Fresh Monkey Fiction actually does the Amazing Heroes action figure line. They do a lot of the Golden Age characters. One of my favorite action figures actually in my collection is my Black Terror that I actually got actually from one of the very first Kickstarter fundraising campaigns that they actually did for those. And I've always been meaning to go over and actually buy more of those. And it just seems like whenever they have done another Kickstarter or whatever, like I'm strapped for cash when they do it. And I haven't been able to pick up any of those. But they've made some really cool figures over there. You know, they did not only, like I said, the Black Terror. I love the Black Terror. I just think he's kind of a cool character. But they also did, you know, the Golden Age version of Blue Beetle. They've done Nexus. They've done Mike Allred's Madman, as well as, these really cool Golden Age characters like Stardust, the Super Wizard, even the Golden Age version of the Streak. It's just really kind of cool what they've been doing with those action figures. I think it's really kind of neat. And those would be ones I think would be neat to be graded and preserve again, because for me, I'm not going to take those out and play with them. You know, they're just going to stay in the packaging anyway. So why not? Right.
I think it should be more like the guy in that that SNL skit where they did the thing with the adult collectors versus the kids when the Force Awakens figures came out. The one guy's all like, "I've got one in the package, I've got one loose, and then one just because." And then the kid's sitting there like, "Why?"
Well, the SNL bit that traumatized me, Eric, it was actually the New Balance bit. Like the middle-aged men wear the New Balance sneakers. That's the SNL bit that I've never really gotten.
Oh, I'm not familiar with that one. Sorry.
Yeah, I hated that.
I'm talking about the skit where they were making fun of adult collectors when Force Awakens stuff came out.
Yeah.
I was like, dude, this is hitting too close to home. This is starting to hurt, man. This is really starting to hurt.
No,
So Ronnie had another comment. He says, "I'll never forget selling a $300 NES game called Gunnack. You shoot space carrots. It was loose. There are a lot of complete and box collectors that don't touch the game. They just play the emulators instead." And that's actually an interesting point, Ronnie, that a lot of people, a lot of game people as far, you know, these days, they don't care about physical anymore. A lot of gamers don't even care about physical. I do. I like to have an actual physical copy of the game. Personally, I don't really like doing digital downloads, and I don't use emulators very much. I tried to kind of get into it, but I feel it's like a little bit sketchy. I get worried about, you know, malware and things like that. And I was like, eh, you know, plus I'm not into pirating stuff in general. I'm just not into that, you know, because I want to create stuff and I want people to pay me for it. So, but there are, I do understand, especially even legitimately, a lot of people, they prefer digital gaming over physical anyway. So they don't even really care about the physical stuff.
That's interesting. And I was thinking about some of the stuff that I have in my collection, action figures and stuff that I'm preserving because I think they're cool. But like, I don't even know if they could even grade them anyway. Like I've got a Captain Action Flash Gordon. Like, can they even grade that? Because that thing's gigantic in the box. It's huge.
Maybe David Motz has some more experience with grading action figures. I've never even looked into that, to be honest with you, about grading action figures. I know there are places you can do it. But it doesn't seem like graded action figures have taken off anywhere near like comics, or trading cards for that matter. You know, although it looks like gaming has definitely taken off, and I think quite possibly in a very bad way. So we'll see what the future holds, and we'll see if any indictments or lawsuits happen in the future, and we'll cover them here on the Retro Rogues Live.
Well, that all sounds very interesting to me. Be definitely a different angle anyway, if that kind of crazy shenanigans does happen.
You never know, Dave. You really don't. And when you see these prices, I definitely, my spidey sense definitely starts to tingle that something is not quite right here. There's something going on, you know? So
Interesting.
Market manipulation is a real thing.
Don't
forget that as a collector. Market manipulation is a real thing. It does happen. It happens in some fairly innocent ways, and it happens in some straight up ripoff. You are a thief. You need to go to jail ways. So we'll see what category this all falls into in the future. Time will tell.
Well, cool. Do you have anything else for the collector's corner portion?
No, actually, we had one more thing that we talked about in the announcements, and I didn't talk about it last week, so I need to talk about it this week before the show gets away from us, because we are over the hour mark. We're hour 15 at this point. I wanted to talk about Loki, and I wanted to talk about its how it's been received, right, and with some actual numbers, because people will talk out of the rear end all the time on YouTube about, oh, Loki is a massive hit, Loki is a massive failure, and they don't back it up with anything. So the Nielsens have actually been rating Loki for about 3 weeks now. For anybody that's not familiar with how the Nielsens rate streaming shows, they're always basically a month off. So like the period we're talking about right now is from the 21st of June to the 27th of June, back when Loki was still on. And so I thought this was interesting. This is actually, this would cover the third week that Loki was on. So, because it says that there were three episodes at the time of this particular rating. And I thought this was pretty interesting. So, and I did, I had wanted to talk about this last week, and they were only on episode two at that point, but the result was the same. Loki was number one. Now, what's interesting, okay, is we did talk about this. It's been a while since we did any Streaming Wars coverage, and we did talk about this, though, when it first happened. Originally, when the Nielsens did their ratings, they put all of the streaming content together, okay? So it was all of the shows, anything that was streaming, whether it, I think it was a show, whether it was considered a movie, they all had to compete together. What they've done now is they have a tab that says original programming, okay? So you can see here that Loki is number one. This would have been in their third week of release with 713 million minutes of viewing. And I also like the fact that Nielsen rates this way, because we've also talked about Samba TV, and Samba TV does it by views, but the way they do it is the same way like YouTube does views, where it's like if you watch like 2 minutes, that's a view. Okay. And that's not appropriate, right? Because if you only watch 2 minutes of a show and then turn it off, that to me is not a view. That to me is that's a loss. That's like you lost that person. So they do actual minutes on Nielsen's, which I do like. But what's interesting is they have these categories. So even though Loki won the category of original program, when you go to the acquired tab, and let's remember that 713 million minutes. Well, when you go to the acquired tab, it's actually a show called Manifest that's number one by a lot, 2,064 minutes. It's not even close. Now, granted, I'm sure this show has been out longer. It's got 29 episodes. But then what's interesting is this other show, Cocomelon, which only has 12 episodes. They're almost tied with Loki at 712 minutes. And it's really interesting. It's also interesting when you look into these numbers of some of these legacy shows. Now, you know, you look at something like Grey's Anatomy. I mean, they got 375 episodes, right? So it kind of makes sense that if the show's popular at all, it's going to be doing pretty well as far as actual minutes of viewing. But I just thought that was interesting. And then the other category they have is movies. And Disney Plus is actually number one there as well with Luca. Which was a Pixar movie that I barely even knew about. And that's over 1,000 minutes as well. And then Fatherhood on Netflix is beating out Loki at 885 minutes, which I think is really interesting. And then The Ice Road from Netflix, that's at 714 minutes, also besting Loki. So it's kind of interesting when you look at this, you know, because here's the total, because if you're looking at the category, Loki's number one. But if you actually look at everything together, Loki was number five in its third week of release. So I just thought that was interesting. We haven't talked about numbers in quite a while, Dave, and I thought it would be interesting to bring up because I know you actually watched Loki. So I'd like some of your insight about the show.
Well, I quite liked Loki. I feel like, in my opinion, it's easily the strongest of the Disney Plus shows. I felt like it was the most expansive, and it opens the door for the most potential for the MCU. And there was one particular scene and actually a classic character who actually showed up in the, one of the later episodes, who I thoroughly, thoroughly loved, and I had so much fun with that. I would say of easily of the Disney Plus shows, in my opinion, locally, Loki is far above and away the best of the new Marvel Disney Plus shows. I still think the best Disney Plus show is The Mandalorian, but Loki is easily the best of the newer the Marvel content. Loki as a show, I feel like is better than Black Widow the movie too. I might add that as well.
That's funny. That's exactly what I was going to ask you, because I wasn't sure if you'd seen it or not. And I was going to like, could you compare it to Black Widow at all? And that's really interesting. Yeah. That's exactly what I was thinking when you said that.
Yeah, I honestly enjoyed it more. It was kind of the most fun. It had a lot of talking, you know, like a lot of the Disney Plus Marvel shows, a lot of people sitting around talking at times, but the banter was really, really fun. Like Luke Owen, I think it's Owen Wilson's in it. He is a lot of fun. It, like him and Tom Hiddleston kind of bouncing off of each other, they work really well together. And I just honestly just enjoyed what they were doing. And then the way that it ends, it has a lot of stakes for the MCU. And let me put this out there too, that I was kind of shocked at, because I was on Disney Plus and I was looking at, you know, they have a tab in the Marvel section where you can actually go in and you can look at the timeline, like the actual MCU timeline, like this happened first and this happened second, right? Like, for example, they say that that actually, I think it was like the Brie Larson Captain Marvel movie happens much further in technically the MCU timeline than when the movie was actually released, for example, right? And we know the movie's set in 90s, but, you know, other than that, it's kind of hard to place it. I thought this is really interesting. Loki happens technically, if you look at it in the MCU timeline, Loki happens before Falcon and Winter Soldier, and also happens before WandaVision. And I feel like because of that, that there are things that were confusing in Falcon and Winter Soldier and actually also WandaVision for me that I feel like are going to be explained basically by events that actually happened in Loki. They just haven't connected the dots yet.
Interesting.
Which would be really interesting. If that's true.
Ronnie had a comment and he says, I agree that Loki is the best Marvel show out there. And I liked it way more than Black Widow. Again, that was something that I was also interested in, Ronnie. So that's interesting. At this point, I'm boycotting them both. So I have no intention of seeing either one, but I was interested in that comparison about, because I've heard things about Black Widow both ways, by the way, good and bad. And I just thought that was interesting how it compares to Loki.
Yeah, it was. I was genuinely surprised. I had a coworker telling me about it. I was gonna sit out Loki, and I heard a lot of good buzz about it. And I thought, well, let me check it out. And you know, first couple episodes were good. I enjoyed them. But then there was one important pivotal moment, and it kind of changed my opinion on it. And it really, really opens the broader MCU up to a lot of potential. And that's the thing that intrigues me the most is, you know, what kind of could kind of come from it. And then I feel like, too, that Loki shows us that, you know, like we liked the Stan Lee cameo, for example. Well, Loki sets up an interesting premise where maybe there might be someone else having, quote unquote, those kind of cameo moments and showing up in other things and us not really, you know, I think now we'll kind of understand it's more significant if they decide to do that. They may not decide to go that route, but it was really kind of, I thought it was really kind of fun.
Well, I know Feige had said that Loki was going to be the most relevant of the Disney Plus Marvel shows in terms of actual repercussions to the MCU. I think we were both disappointed that Falcon and WandaVision didn't seem to really go there. I still say they're basically excuses for new action figures, toys, and costumes more than anything else. And the implications just aren't that good. They aren't that wide. But I do know Feige had said that Loki specifically was supposed to be more relevant when it came to the direction of the MCU and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I feel it definitely is, and time will bear it out. So, but yeah,
I'm curious. Just since we did touch on it, do you feel Black Widow has any real relevance to the future of the MCU? It is considered the beginning of what, Phase 4, right? So, do you think it really sets that up, or do you think it's more of just sort of a standalone throwaway?
No, I feel like there's definitely significance. There's things that tie into actually other things that we've seen in the Marvel Universe. It potentially there could be some interesting and potentially far-reaching ramifications actually for some things that happened in Black Widow. But we're going to have to get a movie or two past Black Widow before we're really going to know exactly what that significance is.
Gotcha. And then Ronnie mentions, I want to see more Deadpool and Korg YouTube videos. I actually have seen that, Ronnie. That's something that I have seen, and I thought it was kind of clever and fun. I think it would actually be fun to see Deadpool, you know. The way I'm looking at it, I feel like this is like a soft entry point for Deadpool into the MCU. And I think they could really use this, like if they kept doing more videos, but not necessarily with Korg, but with just different characters from the MCU. I think that would be a lot of fun. Have you seen that video, that reaction video, where Ryan Reynolds is reacting to his own movie as Deadpool with Korg? Have you seen that, Dave?
Where are all the freaking dogs? I love that. I love that. It was so awesome. I thought it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I thought it was funny, and I feel like it is. It's meant to kind of give that soft entry point for Deadpool, because I do think they do intend to bring him into the MCU at some point. I mean, I think it's a fairly no brainer. Yeah, David Motz, totally agree. Deadpool and Spider-Man would be cool, very cool. Yeah, I totally agree with that, and especially since Spider-Man is technically, you know, Sony, right? So that would be kind of interesting too, since Deadpool literally might be the only thing that survives the Fox, you know, Marvel universe, if you will, right? There are some rumors, by the way. This is a good time to bring it up. I don't know if you heard, Dave, but there are rumors that Hugh Jackman might be coming back as Wolverine. There is some rumors about that. But otherwise, I think Deadpool is really the only one from the Fox universe, if you will, that is going to make the transition, for sure, you know?
Well, all I'm going to say is this. If Disney wants to make crazy, crazy truckloads of money, like they need more, but the obvious play would be, now that we have the multiverse in the MCU, would be, you know, by the end of the year to announce a Deadpool versus Wolverine movie with Hugh Jackman coming back, and then have a trailer that pokes fun at the whole Batman v Superman thing, with the Martha bit. Why'd you say that name? It's like, I don't know. I just felt like it. So I don't know. I'm just telling you right now, because every time Hugh Jackman even remotely hints at coming back as Wolverine, the internet almost snaps in half. So if they could actually do a movie that actually plays out that whole thing with Deadpool and Wolverine in the movie together, I think they could just back those trucks up and just shovel that money in, because they're going to need those trucks for all that cash.
Yeah, I totally agree. It seems like a no-brainer, but we'll see if it happens or not. We'll see if it happens.
There you go. Do we have...
You want to address Mike's comment there?
He says, Mike Lombard says, saw a funny meme with Doctor Strange pulling in Foss. I don't know what Foss is, Mike. I'm a little lost. Do you know what that is, Eric?
No, I thought you would. That's why I thought I would have you.
Oh, no, I'm totally
you're
lost.
You're the encyclopedia of comic book knowledge, so I thought you would know what he was referring to.
It may be an abbreviation for something, but I'm sorry, Mike. It totally went over my head. Oh, Fox characters.
There we go. It was a typo. Okay.
Okay. Now I get it. So
other Spideys, Logan, and the latest Fantastic Four Wendigo, and they said.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be kind of funny with Doctor Strange pulling in. I get the image. Doctor Strange pulling in like all these alternate universe, you know, and the Fox character specifically, you know. I get it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind seeing Jessica Alba back. I'll tell you that. Wouldn't mind that at all. And Doctor Strange says, "No, we are good."
So basically, the latest version of Fantastic Four also wants to go help, and he's like, "No, we're good. You guys can stay right where you are."
Yeah, we don't need the latest version of the Fantastic Four. That's for sure. Again, but I wouldn't mind seeing Jessica Alba back. I really wouldn't. Right. I wouldn't mind that one single bit.
Yeah. All right. Do you have anything else that you want to cover, either for pop culture or streaming wars this week?
No, I think we actually covered everything that we teased. So,
all right, well, there you go. I do have one thing I want to announce. I said I was going to do it basically last episode, so I'm going to do this real quick. I'm going to bring up my screen here. So we do have a new version over at Kirby Tees. Kirby Tees is my t-shirt company. If you go to KirbyTees.com, we have a new version of the Skeletor shirt. So I wanted to show that off real quick. So this is a Kirby Tees website, and it's over here on the far side. We're going to click on that and bring that up. So this is the new version of the Skeletor t-shirt. I'm going to magnify that here on the screen a little bit. This is the photo of the actual shirt itself. I need to retake that photo because the design actually looks a lot better. Actually, I feel like this picture actually portrays. But we have Skeletor here with Thor's hammer. Obviously, somehow he apparently was worthy. And then we have the reaction of a lot of the Master Universe characters who are not sure what to make out of the idea of Skeletor having Skeletor now being Skeletor. So. Anyhow, I just thought I would show that off. So you can check that out over at KirbyTees.com. And then, too, I'll just remind everyone, too, we do also have Sarah Arrowsmith's Brains Are Magic, and we've got some other fun new things on here, as well as the Retro Rogues t-shirts. We actually highlighted the Rogues spoiler and the more Picard design from before, but I thought maybe we'll just take a second here. We got these really cool Retro Rogues logo t-shirts modeled by our model here, Erica, over at KirbyTees.com. But check those out. Got these fun things. Just check out what we're doing over there at KirbyTees.com. And maybe consider picking up a version of that Skeletor shirt. So,
yeah, there you go. I love the Skeletor. The Skeletor is awesome. But definitely try to check out those Retro Rogues t-shirts. Definitely do that as well. But I love the Skeletor. I think Skeletor is awesome.
Yeah. I think it's really cool. Obviously, I'm kind of biased, but this is a collaboration between the Janimal, Janmark, who was actually the original co-host of the In the Studio Retro Retrospective show. It's a collaboration between the Janimal and actually myself. And just to be clear, you know, if you purchase actually the Skeletor shirt, or the Brains Are Magic shirt, a portion of this money actually goes to the artist that actually created these too. So you're actually helping out an independent artist and actually helping out my new t-shirt company as well. So, but anyhow, enough about that. Just wanted to throw that out there.
Support indie, folks. Support indie. If you don't, nobody will. So.
Very true. Very true. All right. If we don't have anything else, I guess we'll go ahead and move over actually to our outro. So I want to thank you for hopefully watching or listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live. I want to encourage you too, if you've missed any portion of this episode, you want to check out more of what we've got going on. Darn it, I missed the beginning. Check out the replay. Check out the replay over on the YouTube channel. That's BassGod14, BASSGOD14. Or you can check out actually our audio show. The audio show actually is a fun way to actually take the Retro Rogues show actually on the road with you. You can check that out. We're on Anchor, Spotify, Stitcher, all the major podcast services. You can find links to a lot of this over at DaveBeatty.com. That's my own personal website. So you go there at DaveBeatty.com and you can check out all of that. As well as we still have up on there the Retro Rogues fanzine. You can check that out if you get a chance to check that out. That is also available. it's free for you to download. You just download it and you can enjoy it and own it for as long as your digital device holds it, I guess. I don't know. But enough about that. I want to thank you for watching this episode. And I don't have to plug anything because you've been plugging everything I'm mostly involved with. So there you go. I want to thank my great co-host, Mr. Eric Alexander, for being on here and providing, as always, his unique perspective and insight, and as well as bringing us all these fun news tidbits about the San Diego online events that I totally forgot all about. Eric, please tell the folks, if you're watching or listening at home, where they can learn more about you on the interwebs.
I'm most active on Twitter. You can find me there at BassGod14, at BassGod14. And my DMs are open. I'm not snooty. So if you want to send me a DM, you can. If you just make a comment on a thread or a comment on this broadcast, because I do always broadcast the show on Twitter as well. If you make a comment, I'll probably be the one commenting back to you. As Dave mentioned, that's the official YouTube. So again, you make a comment there. More likely than not, I'll be the one responding to you there. And also, that's the official Twitch right now. There's BassGod14. So check those out. And if you make any comments, good, bad, ugly, it's fine with me. All I ask is don't get personal. All right. And then David Motz had one final very nice comment for you. He says, thanks for the show. See you next week. And with that, we'll leave David Motz with the last word.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live podcast. You can learn more about Eric Alexander and Five the Live Show on either Twitch, YouTube, or Twitter by searching for BassGod14, that's BassGod14, on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. If you are curious about co-host Dave Beatty, you can see some of his art, find social media links, and so much more at his website, DaveBeatty.com. That's DaveBeatty.com. If you enjoyed this episode of the Retro Rogues Live, be sure to like, share, and subscribe.